Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, fellow seekers, to episode number 65 of God Beyond the Bible, a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. Our hope and prayer is that each of you are remaining well and safe as we together, as humanity, navigate this difficult and uncertain period of world history. As always, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to our little podcast. Our goal is to give you, the individual, an opportunity to enjoy independence and personal control concerning your personal spirituality as we encourage one another to discover and experience this exceedingly good and positive force many have come to so generically call God. What about our shout-outs for this week?
Sure. Our shout-outs for this week are to Lue and Hannah, and I actually drew the quote of the week this week, too. Okay. So the quote this week is, God is the ocean, and we are but temporary waves atop, always flowing back into the greater. And that was Oprah.
All right.
Nice.
I like that. Well, last episode, I'll try not to breathe in the microphone as much as I did two episodes ago. I could hear myself. I have some pollen problems. So anyway, last episode, in fact, the past two episodes were on the topic of how the current health concern has not only impacted our lives, but how our society and personal lives may be impacted and altered in the future. Last episode in particular, we gave thought to how the transformation to the virtual church in place of the brick and mortar establishment may have been accelerated. And this episode, we're going to change gears and explore the topic of conscious existence.
Okay, so let's jump right into segment one. We're going to lay some groundwork for what we're talking about. And we're going to begin by asking this question. If a person is not conscious of their own existence, do they exist?
This is one of those tree falling in the woods kind of.
Yeah, but, and it goes, I know that sounds kind of weird, so just stick with this on it, though. But,
well, and I thought it was funny because I asked Steve that question as I was doing my study and stuff, and he looks up at me and he goes, why would I even think about that? That just makes your head hurt. So to be conscious is defined as follows. To be aware of and responding to one's surroundings. Defined in this manner, one might automatically think of consciousness more in the medical sense of being awake and alert than in the spiritual sense of the awareness of one's own existence, which is actually the sense that we want to explore today.
So in this episode, when we use the term conscious or consciousness, we ask you to think in terms of being aware of our own existence in the world we live in.
Okay, so here's the question. Speaking in the spiritual sense, is our consciousness of our own existence the only part of us that needs to be preserved for us to continue to exist after this life? In other words, is the extension of our consciousness or awareness of our existence all that is necessary to preserve in order for us to continue to live after the body has experienced physical death?
What do you think?
Yes,
I think so.
Whether you want to call that consciousness a soul or whatever.
Yeah,
word
we
want to
give it titles, but that's really all it is. It's a conscious existence, right?
It's what makes you who you are. So as we again consider Jesus' statement in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, the whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. As we've stated before, simply put, Jesus gave only two options, to perish or cease to exist, or everlasting life, which would be to continue to exist indefinitely.
And it probably, if you want a little deeper on this, I don't remember which episode it was. It's Are We Immortal, I think is the name of it.
Yes.
Are We Born Immortal or something like that. It's on immortality, so you might look at that. Now, it would seem, now let's go back to what I kind of broke in there, but Jesus gave us two options, perish, everlasting life. Now, that's what he said, and you're not going to hear me say heaven, hell, all that, because he didn't say that at all. Other people are saying that. He said it's everlasting life or perish. It would seem that to cease to exist could be defined as the termination of one's own consciousness. And to exist indefinitely, what we call eternal life, could be defined as an extension of one's own consciousness. One may draw from this that our existence or non-existence is purely a state of conscious awareness.
So in practical terms, if a person is involved in an accident or some other traumatic experience that they retain absolutely no memory of any of the details, they may later establish an account of what happened from those who witnessed the event. Even though they are dealing with the physical rehabilitation, the event itself still remains an unconscious event for them personally.
I mean, I've talked to people that spent long terms in the hospital. I remember going to see a guy, Jackie, in the church that I last pastored. And I went up to see him, and he talked to me, and we visited and everything. Well, come to find out, he had a two-week period there. He didn't even remember me being. In fact, he told me, he said, I haven't remembered anything since I've been in the hospital.
Oh, wow. Well, I know that you have a sister that
had an accident
and still
doesn't remember
a
thing about it.
She's like, I remember a few seconds before what was apparently the accident and then nothing until after. So we would like to end this segment with this point. Even if some part of us continues to exist after our physical death,
and I believe it does,
if our conscious awareness should be terminated, then in our own personal conscious reality, it seems like we would cease to exist.
And I'm putting this from God's. We're kind of coming to this from God's perspective. Mm-hmm. All God would have to do is wipe away our conscious awareness, and he could even preserve every part of us that's life. He could call back life to him and just wipe out your conscious awareness, and
you'd have no idea.
That's right. Well, as new age and confusing as all of this sounds, please stay with us as we return attempt to bring this topic into focus in part two of episode 65 of God Beyond the Bible.
All right. Welcome to part two of our discussion on the role our personal consciousness plays in our spiritual life. The main takeaway from part one is that all God really has to do as far as extending our existence or terminating our existence is to extend or terminate our personal conscious awareness.
And some folks, and I will go ahead and say that I am one of them, believe that all of us existed in some form before we were born and took the form of a human being. And do you guys think this could have been what David was claiming when he said in Psalm 139 that God knew him before he was ever formed in his mother's womb? I mean, if you think about it, David was confident that he had an existence before he himself was ever consciously aware of his own existence.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds a little weird, I know, but is it possible then that a lot of texts, such as the one in Psalms 139, and others that are used to bolster predestination, may actually be texts that are supporting our previous existence that we're not conscious and aware of?
And once again,
does that make any sense?
That's something that I've always thought. Another one of those verses that fits really well into this idea is Ephesians chapter 1, verse 4, where Paul said, even before God made the world, he loved us and chose us.
Okay, yeah. See, it changes everything. If you think about this, a conscious existence, and it could have been a conscious existence, and when you become human, I've got a friend that says,
What if we choose? What if we choose and we want to be immortal? If we want to become the immortals, that we say, okay, God, I'll go down and do a tour on earth. Yeah. And this is the only transition to immortality is you do this. We're not conscious we made a choice. But, you know, I'm always saying I didn't choose to be here. Maybe I did.
Maybe you're just unaware at this particular point in
time. Because my consciousness of a former existence doesn't exist.
I've always believed that we have, as like I said, someone who believes that we come from God, and that I believe that we have extensive knowledge of eternal things that we are unable to access in our current situation, in our current, whether it's our brain's incapacity in this body or whatever it may be that halts us. I think we're incapable of accessing information that we actually know.
Well, and there's a lot of different, and we'll get into that, but there, a lot of people just believe that we almost choose not to see in any other, I don't know, dimension, I guess, if you want to say it that way. So if you think about it, we aren't really born with a consciousness of our own existence. I mean, it actually develops over a period of our infancy and childhood. We here at God Beyond the Bible have developed a theory that as infants, we are still more connected to the dimension as we came that we came out of than the one we've been born into. As most small children develop and adjust to sights, sounds, and other physical sensations of our natural world, and develop a self-identity and consciousness, it is possible that they are simultaneously losing their consciousness of a pre-existing state. And that's one of the things I was talking about. Some people believe that we kind of become grounded to this earth, and so we only see with the physical eyes. And I'm trying not to jump ahead.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, this plane.
Yeah, I read a thing that was essentially like we have a spiritual umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. And when we come into the world, it's sort of attached to a different dimension, you know, and then as we become more grounded here, it begins to attach to this world.
That makes sense to me.
That's interesting.
So this that we were talking about.
Apologize again. Breathe it in the microphone.
This idea of developing a self-identity and consciousness is supported by science in the study of the part of the brain that's known as the pineal gland. Did I say that
right?
That's
it. That's what it is. Yes. The pineal gland, yes.
The pineal gland is about the size of a grain of rice in human adults, and it's known to be the gland that secretes melatonin, a hormone that regulates our sleep pattern.
And let me say something about it. It also secretes serotonin.
Which is the feel good.
That is what makes you feel satisfied and makes you feel good when you've accomplished something. And it converts, if I understood it right, it converts serotonin to melatonin, which is a combination of feeling really comfortable and good. And then sleep. I'm sorry.
No, Tracy, you're fine. All right. So 17th century philosopher and scientist René Descartes.
I guess.
Sure.
Descartes. I looked it up.
Descartes.
I YouTube pronunciations. Oh, Descartes. I never know. Oh,
well,
so it's Descartes.
I would have been like Tracen.
This is why, guys, I get in trouble because I've only read most of the things in my life.
That's right with me.
So René Descartes was highly interested in anatomy and physiology, and he discussed the pineal gland both in his first book, The Treatise of Man, written sometime before 1637, and in his last book, The Passions of the Soul, written in 1649, where he regarded the pineal gland as the principal seat of the soul and the place in which all of our thoughts are formed.
What do you guys think about that? The pineal gland thing.
I think it's very interesting. I mean, and if you feel like God made us and created these human bodies where everything has a function.
Why wouldn't he put a receiver in us?
Exactly.
In his last book, now what was it?
Descartes.
The Passions of the Soul.
Yes.
Yeah, Descartes' Passions of the Soul. In his last book, Descartes split man up into two parts, body and soul, and emphasized that the soul is joined to the body by a certain very small gland situated in the middle of the brain substance and suspended above the passage through which the spirits communicate with the brain.
Now, in the 1600s, that's pretty impressive.
I was always wondering how he knew that little. I mean, usually they knew one way.
Yeah.
There was an X-ray.
Right.
So it was a post-mortem. on the brain. But now you'd be surprised. A lot of people were researching it. That's the way anatomy was researched. Right. But how he found this little grain of, or how he knew so much about it, that's really amazing.
So could this pineal gland be like a physical receptor or antenna in our brain, if you will, that is tuned to that spiritual frequency?
That's what many think. As a matter of fact, that's what a lot of the Eastern religions are convinced.
Well,
they're sages and they're, what are they called?
Excuse me.
They're sages and they're...
Sikhs and sages and shaman.
That was the one I was thinking of, yeah. And they all strongly believe this. In fact, I want to go ahead and throw something in right here. Did you guys know that I did some, and before I knew anything, what started me a few years ago about the pineal gland is they said that people who use meth over a long period of time, addicted to meth, that sensation they get is that the meth actually triggers the serotonin release in the pineal gland. But it also causes it to stop producing after a period of use. So you notice people that have been addicted to methamphetamines may have a lot of trouble finding satisfaction, finding somebody they're happy with, finding a job they can do. So it's because it has milked the brain.
Oh,
according to some research, that it has damaged the pineal gland. To where, and so they say that some people have actually said they've never experienced any satisfaction since, a sense of well-being and satisfaction. I'm just
could that work into the theory of, you know, I mean, people with they tend to hallucinate. Are they truly seeing that spiritual?
I know some. Well, I mean,
or do they have a spiritual antenna that they're able? That it's. I mean. I don't know how we choose what we receive, and they could be receiving some really bad,
exactly,
you know, bad things.
So in many cultures, the pineal gland is regarded as the third eye that perceives and communicates spiritual things, and it's regarded as the link between the physical and spiritual or metaphysical realm. It's interpreted.
It's interesting too. And it's also interesting.
Y'all, I can't read for anything. It's interesting that at about 2 years old, there's a change in the function and activity of the pineal gland that is believed to increase in activity again as a person draws near to death. Some think that this is an indicator that as we grow to embrace our conscious identity in this natural world, our conscious awareness of where we came from fades.
And the people, a lot of people, this is like, you know, the, is it? Chakras. That's your sixth chakra, basically.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you have what, sight, smell, taste, touch.
Yeah, that go down the entire length of your spine.
Mm-hmm. And then they say that's the sixth. Is that your third
and
eye?
They attribute that to people who have clairvoyance, who can see yours.
If you talk to people that are have psychic abilities, and I know there are people that do, and they legitimately have psychic ability. They said that they learned to, utilize that. And they said anybody can do this.
Monks.
Yeah. Anyone can tune their spiritual receptor.
I was actually looking into that yesterday. It was very interesting, but there are steps you can take to activate your third eye, your pineal gland, however you want to word it. And it's really interesting.
The Buddhist monks, that's a lot of what they do, is learning to, they consider it like a muscle that has to be regularly used and exercised for it to function properly. And actually, one of Buddha's quotes on the third eye was that the third eye allows us to see what our other two cannot.
Yeah. I like that, yeah. Okay.
I lost my place.
So I'm not sure.
I think it, Trayson, I don't know if it's you at number eight.
Okay, well, I'll dive in anyway.
Let's do number seven first.
Well, oh, okay, number seven. Okay.
If we have to.
Okay. No, you just read, didn't you?
It's you.
It is me. Okay. Because you just read because you.
Yes. I couldn't say the right word.
Yeah. So what might this mean in practical terms? There seems to be evidence that infants and small children actually see things that we adults do not. And as they mature, that window into the other dimension slowly closes and they retain no memory of their first few years. The same theory is applied to those who are approaching death, who see and even have conversations with people or spirits unseen by those in the room with them.
And Tabby's oldest son, we've told before, mm-hmm. he had friends or spoke to...
He saw people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That no one else could see. But, and then one day he just didn't, it never occurred to him again. Anymore. And you talk to him about it now and he don't really even remember.
He goes, I did what?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, being a pastor and having been on death watch with families, sure. that you've seen the other side of that.
I've seen the other end of that spectrum. Trace, Tabby, you're 8.
Okay, so what does any of it have to do with us being consciously aware of our existence? The pineal gland is also believed to be the very seat of our human consciousness. In other words, this little gland is a physical part of the brain that links us to the spiritual and allows for spiritual communication. Those who believe this also claim that practicing meditation and even hypnosis, anyone can learn to tap into a higher intelligence and spiritual guidance.
And it's believed by those who subscribe to reincarnation that it's the pineal gland that enables us to access memories from a former existence or a former life.
And I know a lot of believers, if you've been in the traditional church, you have trouble with it. But guys, are you going to tell those kids that they, especially when you see those cases where, how could they have a memory of dying
mm-hmm.
a certain way in a former life, an airplane crash or being gunshot
and
or
so
whatever.
Very clear.
And even remember what their name was and stuff. I mean, you've got to give this, we've got to consider some of this. That is, or else you're just going to say, well, it's all the devil. That's all the devil.
Right.
You know, there's always people, it's always demons. Oh, that's demons. That's just demons in those kids.
As Christians, we want to, like we've talked to me, we want to box God in so much. Well, yeah. It's okay that, yeah, we were souls before we were born, or he from the foundation of the earth had us, but we didn't live lives. We can't sure. say God did that
we
to us.
We were just floating around in this little room waiting for our...
Oh, no, we were just, we having nothing. We were in a gumball machine.
Yeah.
We're in a gumball machine, and when the next body came out, click, the next soul came down, and I don't know. It's me and 10, right?
It is.
We will conclude this second segment with the claim by some that it is through the pineal gland that our consciousness or our soul is released back into the spiritual realm upon physical death. Some think this is how those who have an NDE or near-death experience transition back and forth between this realm and the spiritual realm, remaining conscious of our own identity and existence, and that the passage, gateway, portal, whatever one might choose to call it, is this grain of rice-sized part of our brain that for thousands of years was referred to as the third eye, and we give the anatomical name pineal gland.
Okay, so if you aren't yet totally confused, just stand by for a minute and perhaps we can top off that confusion in segment 3.
And welcome to segment 3 of episode 65 of God Beyond the Bible. Having gone down a few rabbit holes in the first 2 segments, hopefully we've emerged with something to think about. Now, in this final segment, let's return to our intended point and topic, Dad. Yeah. And that is that God desires to preserve us in another realm after this life. All he really has to do is preserve our consciousness to do it.
Right. And I think that's right. If he does, I think that's all he has to do. Now, applying the same theory, if for whatever reason he should determine that our destiny is to perish, all we would have to do is erase our consciousness or awareness of our existence. This would be the equivalent of mortality and immortality, would it not? In other words, the life energy of a person who perishes may return to its source, which in the case of us who believe that's God. But if God erases the consciousness of that person's existence, to that person, it is the same as if they never existed.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm going to try and explain this where it makes sense. There's a pretty common theory in, I know we hate to use that word, but it's in Christian mysticism that says, much like my quote at the beginning, that everyone is a piece of the Great Spirit. And when one obtains their goal in this life, whatever you want to call it, whether it's enlightenment, salvation, completing their path, whatever it may be, then you return to the Great Spirit, retaining all of your memories and knowledge. But if for some reason you should fail at whatever task you were sent here to do, then the slate is wiped clean. You go back to the Great Spirit just the same.
Back in the gumball machine?
Back in the gumball machine, but with no... but with no conscious memory of any of it happening. And you essentially go again until...
Wow.
You get it right.
Well, and that's kind of the reincarnationist
thing, I was going right? to say, yeah.
That's reincarnation thing. Tabitha, you're three.
Okay, so let's break it down a little farther. Sorry, Tracen, that one got me thinking. Okay, prior to a medical procedure or operation, someone comes in and gives the patient...
Hopefully a doctor.
or nurse. Anesthesiologist, yeah, something. Yeah. Okay, gives you a pre-op cocktail in the form of liquid pill or a combination of both. A lot of folks aren't aware that this is not the anesthesia that puts you under, but it's designed to block any memory you may have of the operation
itself.
Did
you guys know that?
I did know that.
Okay.
Only because I had a procedure done last fall, they told me. Many sleep aids actually act as a memory blocker. That is why some have warnings that you may sleepwalk or say or do things with no memory of the events. Alcohol can be consumed in the quantity amount that will result in the loss of memory.
Do you think?
So is it possible that in the cases of those who suffer from terrible diseases like dementia and Alzheimer's, which seem to result in one's loss of conscious awareness, that they may actually at some point trigger the transition of that person's conscious awareness to the awaiting spiritual dimension before they actually physically die? Or in layman's terms, do y'all think it's possible that some people are really already gone before they physically die?
I think it's probably more than possible. I think it's likely.
You know, I experienced
because
this...
the brain will still function.
Yeah.
Everything's still going to function, but through the pineal gland, if that's the way, the spirit will just exit. The consciousness will exit.
I can't help, but every time I think about this kind of thing, I think of Grandpa, Virgil.
Yeah.
And he had a stroke, a massive stroke, in January of 2015, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
And he spent about 8 weeks in the hospital, made a recovery, got to come home. But when he came home, he was never
the same
exactly
again.
Exactly the same. And it was almost like you could see that faraway look in his eyes.
Like he was there, but he wasn't ever there.
Yeah. Yes. And then, you know, we did lose him to another massive stroke in May of 2015. But it was almost easy to let him go because it was like you knew he was here, but either he didn't want to be or he was not fully here.
And, you know, I knew the last time that we saw him was when they were taking him to the hospital. And it was so clear at that point that his soul was gone. But, whatever made him him at that point was completely untethered and gone. And I think we see that a lot. And you hear people's stories of, if you want to call it an out-of-body experience, where they encounter something that could have been life-threatening and they watch it from above or, you know, from a separate standpoint.
I think that's exactly what the Apostle Paul did when he was stoned.
And I think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
One more thought we may consider when meditating on this topic is whether other species of creation have conscious awareness of their existence. While we as humans can see an image of ourselves in a photo or our reflection in a mirror and identify ourselves, but just where do we reach that level of development, and do animals ever have that level of perception of conscious existence?
I never put that much thought into a baby looking in the mirror, that they weren't really aware of their own.
That was them.
But you can tell when you set them in front of the mirror, they're not aware that's
exactly,
them.
Exactly, yeah.
But they become aware. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because of the mirror.
No.
I'm sure.
But I never really made it into a deeper, but it was very interesting. Like I said, this got me thinking.
Yeah, you're seven.
Okay. Some claim that our conscious awareness of our own existence is one of the ways we are created in the image of the Most High. Not only are we aware of our existence, but we can meditate and contemplate the future. We can think of a scenario, factor in variables, and with some degree of accuracy, predict the outcome and effect of our actions. There are those who believed that some of the greatest minds, such as Einstein, Tesla, and others, actually had learned to tap into and access a higher level of intelligence by utilizing this connection to the divine.
I think it's believed that Steve Jobs was one of those.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That even Steve Jobs. Okay, Tracen, you're eight, I guess.
There are those who believe that we, in our Western approach to religion and the divine, have forfeited our ability to connect with the Most High in favor of a complacent and organized spectator type of spiritual fulfillment. It's almost as though we've developed and promoted a fear of tapping into that source of higher awareness, information, and intellect that we could so benefit from. And I think Dad really hit the nail on the head earlier talking about we want to make everything demonic.
Oh, yeah.
If it's that's something that we don't understand clearly.
Especially if you came out of certain denominations where they had yes. Pentecostal leanings. Everything was just a demon, you know. Just I heard a preacher one time tell, well, she said, I was late for church because a demon got in my iron. I was ironing my clothes and my cord sparked on my iron and it did all of this. And somebody said, sounds to me like you need a new iron.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. For those who may be thinking, all this sounds too much like some New Age or Eastern mystical spiritualism. Consider Jesus' words recorded in Matthew 6:22. Jesus said, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." And that was the King James Version.
Let's translate that.
Yeah, let me give you the New Living Translation. It says, "Your eye is a lamp that provides light for your body. When your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light."
So if we're able to label today's topic as pure mysticism, then we have to also label Jesus as a mystic.
I would think so.
Now, note that he did not say your eyes, plural, are the light of your body, but instead he said the light of the body is the eye, which is singular. It seems pretty clear that Jesus was not speaking of our physical vision that provides our perception of natural things, but a single eye, a spiritual receptor by which we perceive spiritual things. By the way this statement was carefully framed, it's safe to consider that Jesus was aware that there were those of his audience that clearly understood what he was saying.
I think there was no doubt about it. Go ahead, Tabitha.
So Jesus spoke of the eye, singular, on more than one occasion. And if one should consider the Gospel of Thomas, one would find it filled with the same mystical connotation.
So all God has to do to transition us from mortal to immortal is to preserve our self-consciousness and awareness. It is argued that one wouldn't even need a physical body of any type to live forever.
All right. So as always, may God's grace, peace, and love be on you, in you, and radiate out from you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.